Susi. Hello and welcome to the Fangamer Podcast, episode 19. Here we will be talking today about video games and art, a very nebulous, nondescript topic, but we have some guests here with our live Ustream who will help unravel those mysteries. Each week on the Fangamer Podcast, we like to take something happening around the either Fangamer community or just video games themselves and discuss them with a panel of esteemed experts, subject matter experts, if you will, or people like me and Liz who have no idea what we're talking about.
Moderators, in other words.
Moderator. And as you heard there, there's my co-moderator, Liz B. How you doing, Liz?
I'm doing all right. It's Saturday night. It's 9 o'clock Central Standard Time, and I'm grooving on life.
Yeah. Well, Liz is our computer science wizard, because she just helped Anne figure out what's going on. And Anne Kay is our other illustrious guest for everyone joining us on Ustream. That is the lovely Anne Kay, who is going to do some art for all of you while we talk about art. All 8 viewers. Hey, that's pretty good.
That's not bad.
Considering that we're 30 minutes late.
That's 8 more viewers who have some Saturday Night Fever.
And our third, fourth chair is new to the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Marty, are better known to all you out there as Omnitarian, who has done various shirts here for Fangamer. Clap, clap, clap. Let's talk a little bit about our guests on the show today before we kick it off into the main show topic, or a little bit of what we've been playing too. And so Anne can start cracking away art. Let's do our interview with her first so that she can then concentrate a little bit more on your cracking back there.
Get cracking on the cracking.
So Anne, I think you told me earlier you're living up in Canada in the Eastern time zone. But for the people out there who may not know who or who you are, what do you do around Fangamer? What do you do for a living? What's your profession?
Well, currently right now, I'm a photographer, but I'm also a painter. And what I do for Fangamer, I'm coming out with a t-shirt design, hopefully soon.
Yes,
and very soon. I don't want to spoil anything, so I won't say anything too much about that. But I also did all.
Wait, I got something we can spoil. Just two words: Weezer Blue. That's all.
What I was going to spoil is the fact that I think this might be our first shirt to be released in orange.
We have to solve voting.
Hmm?
But we still haven't voted on
orange
it yet.
Orange is a done deal, though.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
Spoiler, but the audience opinion doesn't matter there. We all love orange.
We do love the orange.
All right.
And we have been looking for an orange shirt.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Anne's got a shirt coming out. What else, Anne? So you've done some photography for us on the store, actually, right?
Yeah. All the recent photography, especially for the ruined... the Dark Omen jacket. If it has a white background, it's mine.
And those are just... And the people in those are just your buddies, right?
Yeah, those are all my friends. Those are all my buddies or employees. By day, I work at a portrait studio, so I take pictures of families, a lot of kids. And there was a week where I had models lined up, and the shipment came in, but because Canada Post is what it is, it was stuck in the back of a van for 4 days. And because those 4 days went and gone, I missed my opportunity to use certain people for models. So I kind of made my staff model in the shirts last minute.
Yeah, well, it looks really good. I mean, we're excited to have some more pictures of everyone besides Camille and Reed modeling all of the clothing. So it helps. We appreciate it.
What I would like is one day you need to come to like a convention or something and bring like some white sheet background and some nice camera, and you need to get all the staff in there. I want some sexy Charlie time. I want some Garrett in his little newsboy hat that he loves.
As long as I can be the one, the yelling, whiny kid who screams in the background, I'm there.
The baby who's crying nonstop.
Right. You know, do you have a lot of experience with the whiny kids, I would imagine, then, coming to this? Yeah. Do you have any, like, tips or strategies you use to try and make them happier in the pictures, or do you just say, all right, that's the parents' job?
Well, part of it is kind of, you got to get the parents to kind of coax the children into the whole idea, but the big secret is just to be a very big, happy person.
So, like, you're on Nick Jr. all the time. You're, what's that guy? Blue's Clues, whatever his name. Steve.
Do you want me to do my shtick?
Oh, could you? Because yeah, especially for the people seeing this would be great, but the people who are can listen to it later.
Okay.
So, I don't want to get my picture taken, Mom. I'm scared.
Okay. Hi, kids. How are you? Are you good? Who's cute? You're so cute. Can you give me a big smile? Who's got a big smile?
I'm smiling.
So I'm cracking up.
See? I need a smile. Then I'll come in. I'll be like, tickle, 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 tickle. and that always works. So, yeah.
Wow. So, Anne, how long have you been with the Starman.net/Fangamer community?
I've been on and off since 2003 because I didn't actually have a computer in my house until 2000. And I would check out the site beforehand just to kind of really get like a strategy guide or playing tips. But I didn't actually join the forum until 2003. And my nickname back then was Cornflake.
I remember. I was going to try and guess your username, but I was like, I remember Cornflake.
Oh, yeah. And that's kind of a play off my name because my last name is actually Cornuda. And it sounds like corn, and I'm usually a very happy, bubbly kind of person, so I'm a little bit of a flake.
That's clever. Here That's I just figured clever. You were a fan of
that
corn.
That was made in grade one.
Well, you made up that name in first grade, is what you said?
No, the bully did.
Oh, well, you took it, and you took it for yourself. You own that.
You
name.
Owned it.
For you.
That's not a bad name. My nickname was like Hairy Arms or Lesbos. Like, you can't win there. You get it, Lesbos.
I think I got
Garrett. So funny.
I got Garrett Ferret, but that wasn't that bad, really.
That's not bad. That's stupid.
Yeah, it was. That's why it was always to my advantage. Like, that's what you got, huh? Good job, buddy. Okay. Also, we're going to let you guys do the ask myself and Liz any random question you want. So, Anne, I'm going to let you think something up while I go and ask Marty some fun questions. So, Marty, are you ready?
I guess so.
Okay. So, this is going to be really good because, Marty, I don't actually know that much about you other than the things you've done for Fangamer. So, what do you do outside of Fangamer for real employment?
Well, I'm actually a student right now. Yeah.
There's a curveball.
Oh.
He's not employed. He's a student.
That's right. This is my last semester at the University of Wisconsin La Crosse, and then in the fall, I'll be going to graduate school at UW-Madison.
UW, like Seattle UW? Or no, Wisconsin?
University of Wisconsin-Madison, yeah.
Okay, because we call ours UW-Madison, too. Okay.
No, Madison.
Yeah, I know.
The UW system.
Okay, cool. So are you going to be studying...
I do geography with sort of an emphasis on cartographic design and GIS, which is like computer mapping software, that sort of thing.
That's awesome.
Wow, you have quite contrasting hobbies and pastimes. I'm
definitely a buffet academic.
Yeah.
So
how did you...
You go, Garrett.
I was going to say, how do you get... how do you balance the two? Because they seem like anything having to do with maybe software and geography would be very encompassing and take a lot of your time. But you do a lot of t-shirt design, not just for us, right? I think I saw one of your shirts on another site.
Yeah, I do. I get printed at other places as well. So I just have a lot of free time, I guess.
You're really good at time management is what you're saying. You got your stuff together. You're not wasting time. You're not playing. Right. You're not doodling around like me and Liz making podcasts all the time.
That's true.
All right, so your forum name is Omnitarian. Does that have a deeper meaning that maybe someone who isn't as uneducated as I am might know what it is, or is that a your own?
Well, yes and no. People presume it's a portmanteau of omnivore and vegetarian.
Oh, that's
good. I would not have thought that.
But it isn't. I was 10 years old, and I needed a cool forum name, and that's the first thing that popped into my mind. So it does not actually have any deeper meaning.
Wow, that's so good.
As a 10-year-old, you probably, without thinking of it, merged the words omnivore and vegetarian.
That's precisely it.
That's pretty good. That's a good kind of like weird like Jedi name, Omnitarian.
And it's just vague enough that you won't get embarrassed by it, but it's not so vague that it's like Plo or X-Fist where it's like, people, why would you do this to me?
It's not fierce.
Fierce.
Or is it fierce or fierce?
No, fierce.
It's fierce 13 is the full name. I actually, I got him a birthday card for his 13th birthday when he told me that fierce was 13 years old. For those of you, Anne and Marty, when my boyfriend was on the podcast, he was talking about how his first screen name he ever used was Fierce, which was what he used for a Wolverine fan fiction he wrote when he was 13, which was about being a 13-year-old with Wolverine claws and just generally being kick-ass.
Yeah, you know, every 13-year-old has that dream, I think, at one point, right?
A 13-year-old girl, like, I wanted to be, like, a sailor scout. That's totally much cooler.
If you say so.
It is.
All right, back to Marty. So you're in school. So how long have you been with the actual, like, fangamer/starman.net community?
I was there back when it was earthbound.net.
Wow.
Oh,
yeah, before the
alert.
Before the GBA was even released. So, like, 1999?
Oh, wow.
That's crazy.
But I had a stupider forum handle back then.
What was it?
Oh, what was that?
It was the Game Boy.
Oh.
Very imaginative.
It could have been much worse.
I remember you. You have flown under my radar, Omnitarian. Then again, so did Garrett here.
I basically
didn't know anybody if they weren't in SMNet dudes in IRC. I was elitist scum.
Yeah, the long illustrious history of Starman.net elitism. Mm-hmm. We could write a paper on that.
Check the articles section. There are papers on it.
I know, it was a lead-in for that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is there any other question I'm missing that we're supposed to be asking Marty here that would be smart to do? You know,
what do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah, what do you want to be when you grow up?
I don't know, even though I'm going to grad school. So.
Hey, I am too. It happens. Grad school's for people who don't know what they want to be when they grow up.
Precisely.
Just stay in school forever. Mm-hmm. And eventually they just give you a job at school.
Mm-hmm.
That's what at least I've seen a lot of my friends do.
Yeah.
Still in the school system. Okay, so who wants to go first? Who's got questions for me and Liz so that our audience can laugh at some weird story we're probably going to end up telling?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be related to the internet or podcasts or Fangamer or anything. Casey's asked us about drinking and driving and terrible dates, and Casey really asked the best questions, I'm trying to remember.
Well, he is a journalist. He has a beat, after all.
Yeah, he asks the hard-hitting questions.
All right, Anne, you got one?
Yep.
Okay, shoot.
What was your favorite flame war on the forums?
Your favorite flame war? Or did you say flavor?
Like, no, flame war.
I was like, did we have like a flavor theme at some point? Like you could do mint and strawberry?
Let's
themes?
Answer both of those questions. The flame war, and I want to put it out in the open. What are the best themes for Earthbound? Because we talked about that last night, and I disagree with Anne.
Okay, because I'm not going to remember any good flame wars.
Oh,
I'm going to let Liz take that. So go ahead, Liz.
Some of the stuff, like, nothing really specific, but some of the things with, like, God of Cows, like how he used to come into IRC and just had so much vitriol in his heart. And back when everyone was 13, everybody was so much easier to bait. But my favorite flame war, actually, I do remember this all of a sudden. One of my buddies in Spencer, or my buddies in college, Spencer, was Everdread on the forums. And one time, this girl, Pika-chan, one time she comes into IRC talking about how she opened the trunk of her mom's car and found a pair of man's pants and didn't know who they belonged to. And Everdread kept asking her, like, she was really freaked out by it, but he'd be like, how big are the pants? And she'd be like, this is serious. I don't know how those pants got into my car. I don't know what my mom is doing. But he'd be like, no, how big are the pants? And for years, like literally years, every time they crossed paths, he would say it like the same way with two G's on big, and she would just flip out. She'd be like, "What's wrong with you? You're such a monster. Why won't you leave me alone?" It was so stupid, but like,
oh crap, why am I laughing?
But the IRC is just so dumb, and so it was enjoyable. Just, we never found out how big those pants were, actually. Probably pretty big.
Oh man. Okay, now I have the really great follow-up question for myself. Okay, what is the greatest flavor for your what is it, the menus Earthbound in Earthbound menu. I am partial to just the plain or mint. I don't like any of the other ones. And you know what the worst one is? Everyone knows the worst one is.
Strawberry.
Because then it looks like you're dead all the time.
Bingo.
I love strawberry.
See, that's what Anne's problem is. She likes strawberry and peanut, which is like, ugh.
It's so in your face.
Peanut is brown all the time.
The poop color.
Yeah, it is the poop color.
It's gross.
I kind of like the peanut. It kind of complements all the other colors that are in the game when you're playing it.
Okay, but how did you not get sick? I mean, because I did try the strawberry once, and I was like, no, I just feel like Ness is dead all the time
now. Yeah, we all made that mistake once. Banana's not great either.
Okay, what do you got, Marty?
Oh, man.
He's like, how do I follow up those awesome questions?
Sure. I'll go with, what's your most embarrassing story from middle school? And I'll actually cushion the blow by sharing mine.
Oh,
and that
go for
is
it.
That I passed out and threw up in shop class.
Oh. Wow. Wait.
And
that.
The circumstances.
In what order was it, though? Throwing up and then passing out? Or passing up and then throwing up?
Because that usually
passing out and then throwing up.
Really?
But kind of like both at the same time.
Oh, I mean, wow. Simultaneous.
Kinda, yeah, but the thing is that it wasn't really anything at all. Like, it just was walking over, and then I started seeing spots, fell down, and threw up.
Wow. So, like, did it turn out to be like a medical issue or something? Or
no.
To this day, we don't know.
Right.
That happens sometimes. I jammed my thumb once, and the same thing happened to me. It's just like your body every now and then is like, nope, I quit.
Your body rage quit on that. Like, that was too much.
It's like, you jammed your thumb, you asshole. Goodbye.
Done. Taking a nap. All right, let me see if I can think
of it. My body did rage quit because I really hated that shop class.
Yeah, that was probably it. Shop was although I never took shop, I was always jealous of it because everyone in shop got to make really fun, like, dice and, like, wood with their name in it and, like, cutting boards. I was like, oh, I could use a sweet cutting board.
My high school shop class, they made, like, crazy crap. Like, they were making full-blown cabinets and coffee tables.
Oh, I was...
made, like, the nice oak-inlaid chess set made of all
I thought
wood.
We were talking about middle school here. I was like, middle school? They were still just gluing panels of wood together to make a cutting board. They weren't even allowed to, like, cut out wood.
In middle school, we didn't have shop. We just had home ec, which is when we would warm up microwave fries and be like, we did it! We did it together!
Good job! Yeah. High five! Okay, come on. We gotta think of some shameful stories here.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a couple.
Go, because I gotta think.
Couple, okay.
My middle school time, I sat at, the way the cafeteria was laid out, like all middle school cafeterias, was by, like, popular group, like Mean Girls, and I was in the second biggest loser table. The biggest loser table was a dude who crushed cans by putting them kind of, like, up his butthole and then, like, sitting down, so I didn't sit at that table. A couple people at that table were also mentally handicapped, but not the can crusher.
No, not the can crusher.
Not the can crusher. No. He was fully cognizant of his own abilities. But I sat at the table of people who were into crap like Neverwinter Nights, which I guess is slightly better than crushing a can with your own butthole. So I was sitting at the table trying to entertain my nerd friends, which is, like, so sad. And I had a ketchup packet out, and I was like, you know what cartoons, when they hit these and the ketchup goes squirting out? That's such bullcrap. I bet that never happens. And I was like, see, look, I'll do it right now. And so like, this wicked karate chop down on it. And sure as hell, it busts open and goes shooting across the room and hits this, like, skinny, tall, goth kid who's all decked out in, like, the big black Jankos, and there's chains all over his bus pass, and he just looks over at me and he's like, what the hell? And the cafeteria ladies come running by and they're like, why did you do that? And I'm like, I didn't mean to. I didn't think it would work. I didn't get in trouble. Because
you didn't just yell, science.
Don't ask a scientist where that
ketchup came from. Don't ask a scientist how that worked. Or a physicist. Yeah. It was magic.
It's a miracle. So yeah, that was one of the worst moments of my middle school. I'm sure if you gave me time, I could think of more.
Wow. Gosh. Yeah. Okay, I thought of one that... I don't know if it I feel shameful about it just because I was so dumb, but it probably wasn't that bad. But so I would I think 7th or 8th grade, I would take the actual public bus to go home because I could get home faster than I could with the actual school bus. Because the school bus, because, you know, they got to save money. They got to cart all the kids on the other half of town home first, and then they come over to where I live to drop me off. So it'd take me like 45 minutes to go home. So I take the public bus. So I would – leave after school and walk all the way down there, and I have to get there really fast to catch it. So one day, I don't know how this happened, but like we had different schedules. Like it was like early release day or something weird. We had an assembly, so like all the schedules were off by a couple minutes or something. So we had class like in the computer lab that day, and we were supposed to go back. Well, little did I know, I thought we were supposed to go back to class after that, and I just didn't remember. So I started going home. The bell rang. It was like 5th period. I thought it was 6, and I just left. I started walking out front, and while I'm walking, I'm like, huh, why isn't anyone going to catch the buses? I was like, oh, where are the buses? And, of course, that doesn't really faze me. I'm like, well, that's not a big issue. And so I keep walking. There's no buses there to pick anyone up. There's no kids running to meet their parents. I'm like, huh. And I keep going, and I got about maybe like 500 feet from the school, maybe even more than that, before I thought, there's something wrong here. School isn't over. And then I walk back and I'm like, oh my gosh, what if they think I was trying to skip? What if the security guard finds me and I get in trouble? Oh, what if my teacher's like trying to figure out where I was because I'm supposed to be back in class right now? And I was totally freaking out. So I'm like running back to school, and I get back to my class. And I nonchalantly show up about 15 minutes late and just sit in my desk, and no one questioned me. No one asked anything.
Nobody cared.
It was like 7th or 8th grade, though. In theory, they really should have cared. I mean, yeah. What the hell? I was able to leave campus before school was over, and almost got on a public bus home about an hour before school. And now that I think about it, I should have done that more often.
Yeah.
Should have just left. But anyway, I was so ashamed because, like, how could I not realize school was over? How dumb was I? But that's the best I got.
I feel bad asking this qualifier. Like, I'm not sure how much of an impact it has, but was that before or after Columbine?
Oh, that's a good question. I think Columbine was, you know what? It was right around then because I remember the year that happened, we had to start wearing our ID badges, like, out on our person. When usually you just kept your ID badge in your locker all year. Like, you never used your school ID badge for anything except for, like, checking out books. But after Columbine, I remember they instituted policies where you had to have your badge visible on site so a security guard could point at you and be like, oh, you're a student here, you're not, sort of thing. I don't know how that was going to help anything, but
yeah, like,
I just...
students are the ones doing the shooting. I guess the ID makes it easier to, like, figure out who's doing it, but I don't know.
Whatever made the parents feel any better.
Yeah.
you guys been playing any games? Should we just
skip it? I'll inundate people on Wednesday with how much I love God of War.
But you know, that's our other podcast. We're supposed to be talking about Shadow of the Colossus, right?
I'm going to talk about how God of War is everything Shadow of the Colossus is not. So it's going to happen.
All right, well then, for the Fangamer News segment, let's just talk about briefly then. One, Game Club is wrapping up the first season, so to speak. The last, the last five Colossi are this week. We'll be recording in at Wednesday at 5:30 Pacific, 8:30 Eastern. And we'll also have our poll up already right now of what the next games will be playing for, or for you to vote on which game we'll play next. I think, Liz, what are our five or six choices people have to vote on?
Well, one of them is the clear winner right now, but yeah. I'll say that if you still believe in democracy, the six options are Majora's Mask, which is the, like, far and away front runner. Paper Mario.
Is my favorite.
Pokemon Red, Blue, and Yellow.
I want us to win that. I want to do that.
What were the last three I said? Did I say
Cave Story?
Super Metroid and Snake's Revenge?
Snake's Revenge, Cave Story. Golden Sun.
Golden Sun, yeah.
Oh, man. I don't want to play Golden Sun. That's going to be so much work. That game's huge. Although...
Second one's bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to mention Password.
Have you guys played Cave Story yet?
No. Well, yeah. I'm sure we'll get to it eventually for Game Club.
Like, I mean, just played it, period, though. You've never played it, though, right? Have you played it, Marty?
Yes, I played it on the computer, and then I just got the Wii version.
Yeah, I just downloaded the Wii one, and it's a great little game. It's this. There's a lot of humor in there. It's that Nintendo style, but just more clean, and just it's a really good game. I'm having a good. I can see why people have been telling us play this game. We should make merchandise for it. I think John's actually playing it right now too. So that's always a good sign if you can get John to play it and play it, because he only plays the same 10 games over and over again. Five of them being ones we make shirts from.
That's why I don't think I'll be pushing him to make God of War stuff, is because the idea of John playing that series, he'd be like, "Why am I breaking that woman's spine over my knee? This is hugely inappropriate."
That would make him feel sad, actually.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be happy at that. No, I've been playing the new Left 4 Dead content that just came out.
What is that?
The Passing.
Oh, yeah. So it's like the Passion.
The Passion of the Left 4 Dead.
Yeah.
No, it's fun. We have to play Versus last night with, oh, man, we had pretty much the whole Fangamer crew out there. We had Magic Cake Woman was there, and Steve was there. I think they were on opposite teams, which is always kind of fun to see how that works out.
They have, like, new modes for that, right?
They do. And, well, they also have like an in-game blog now where they can like talk to the fans and talk about all the stuff they're doing. They have like mutations, which I guess are their way of loading up new custom like multiplayer modes on the fly, which is pretty cool. But the new content, it's a good time. The versus mode, man, it's fun playing something new again because everyone knows how to play the game, but no one knows the map. So it was just... You know, it was, excuse the language, it was just rape fest at the beginning of that on versus mode. I mean, people were just getting slaughtered in the first part, because I think this is the first time that Steph had ever played this level, and she didn't want to play versus because of that. I'm like, no, I mean, half of us, this is only the second time you play the level. You're not, you understand that much of a disadvantage, but it was a really good time. We went entirely too late, and I at that point I had had way too many whiskey gingers and didn't sleep very well the next day. So, anyway, let's get out of what you've been playing though. Let's just do this, guys. I'm ready.
Wasn't this Fangamer News?
Fangamer News and what you've been playing combined. That's how we're streamlining this show in the year 2010. Go 180 degrees here, maybe do a full circle while we're at it, and talk about art and video games. Yeah, full circle back to where we should have been in the first place, okay. which was talking about art, video games. We have artists from our community here. Liz, I think, has done some. She showed me a painting of her dog she did once. I have no skills in the art world. My family all does, but I will be happy to help moderate this discussion. So we really threw this up there for the crowd is, what do you think? Video games and art. What are some things going on there? We just started discussing it as a roundtable to prep ourselves for the discussion. And we got into a lot of interesting, you know, debates on copyrights, art as a commodity with commercial art, the impressions of video game as an art form. There was a lot. So where do you guys want to start this off? What do you guys feel passionate about when it comes to art and video games?
Buying as much as I possibly can.
So, okay. You're both artists that do video game inspired art. Let's talk about copyright. You know, what are some things in there that you worry about that you think is kind of bogus, or just things you keep in mind that other artists might consider when they're doing art as well? Let's start with Marty.
Well, it's kind of interesting because I hang around a lot of the t-shirt design contest sites, and there's actually like this hyper-codified, unwritten rules about how to get away with drawing Mario.
There's whatever. Like a handbook yeah. No one talks about. There's Fight Club rules for drawing Mario.
There really is. Like, the one good way to go about it is you draw any character from behind. You don't show their face. And then that will dodge the copyright.
And then, like, what is this just superstition based off? Like, is there an actual copyright that says if you can't see its face, it doesn't count? I mean,
it really isn't. There's no good copyright rules. The sort of the way I like to phrase it is the idiot off the street rule. And that is, the idea is that you want to make something that if you just grabbed a random person off the street and asked, do you think this is official, or do you think this is something fan-made? You want them to say it doesn't look very official. If that makes any sense at all.
So you put a bunch of scratches on it and you blur it out and just make it look kind of crappy.
You have
then.
Calvin peeing on a Ford logo somewhere in there.
Yeah, something like that. But you show them from behind, or another thing you do is show. Well, not show their head at all, or show only their head and not their body.
So if they're decapitated, it's no longer Mario if he doesn't have his legs?
Pretty much, because, well, when you think about it, those blue suspenders are a lot about what makes Mario identifiable. So the idea is that you chop off all the identifiable parts of the character to sort of make it more generic.
Okay.
And then, well, the other... So that's one way to do it. The other good way to do it is to just deeply reinterpret the character into a wildly new style, which has the side benefit of, you know, looking good and being original as opposed to just only
really? So for example, like the PSI Rockin' shirt we have has a caricature of Ness on it, right?
Yeah,
and he does, but it's in a completely different style. So you're saying when you can take the character in a new direction like that, that is considered under the artist community, that's cool. You're okay. Yeah.
May I make a kind of statement here? Just with regards to...
Well, you are the other moderator here. I think you can do whatever you want.
That's true. Yeah, I just didn't want to like interrupt anybody.
We gotta, but Anne gets a 30-second response here. All and right. Then Marty gets a one-minute rebuttal. And then Liz, the next question.
The thing about copyright law is like... The t-shirt design communities, they have all their little rules for how to dodge around copyright, but it's all kind of BS because the whole industry depends upon these big companies not wanting to go after you. Like, all of these companies have the right to protect their intellectual property, and I don't think they're going to be like, well, these suspenders are green instead of blue, so I see where you were going with your innovation here. Like, it depends less on your creativity and more on whether or not they've woken up on the wrong side of the bed, because copyright is fuzzy and nebulous and they keep extending the rights on individual characters. So like they're never, eventually going to fall into fair or not fair use, the public
domain.
Yeah, so
Yeah, that's exactly what happened to Threadless recently, is that they had to pull all of their Star Wars inspired shirts because they got slammed with a cease and desist by George Lucas.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise
so,
me.
So, yeah, they still have all of their Nintendo stuff, but Star Wars, for some reason, didn't like what they were doing.
So I'm just wondering, because on this topic of Threadless, and there is a particular shirt of theirs that I really liked. I even considered buying, of Mario selling shrooms to like a toad, and you can't see his face as it's kind of in the
Yeah,
shadows
in
of
the
the
shadows.
corner. Right. So to me, it just looks like, even though they've done those kind of their little superstition of, cover his face, I see that, Nintendo sees that happening. They're really aggressive with, protecting their IP when it's being kind of misused in that way. I'm just wondering, like, how long before the banhammer comes down on the Nintendo part in Threadless? Or is there just, we know that certain companies just don't care about that. Like, I know
That's a good
Capcom
question.
seems pretty cool about people using their IP. Like, someone was telling me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there was a group who was making specific merchandise that was based off of their stuff, and then they went and, instead of going to sue them, give them a cease and desist, say, hey, why don't you just make this for us? And they gave them a license for it.
That happens sometimes. You gotta be like, I mean, it goes without saying, your product has to be a certain level of quality. Like,
sure, sure.
We'd be lying if we said that that's not one of the reasons Fangamer, like, works so hard on their stuff. Because I think, like, one day it might be nice if a company, like, wow, if somebody, like, God forbid these are the last people who would ever do it, but if, like, Square came to us and was like, yeah, we've decided we really like Chrono Trigger and we want to release Chrono Break after 10 years, and you guys want to make a shirt? Yeah, that would be like the end of an 80s movie where we triumph over evil. Like,
we all like
happen in the
we all jump
the
simultaneously
yeah.
in the screen freeze.
Yeah.
We should do that more often, actually. Just jump up in the air together. That's always
a
good
And then they'll have the little epilogues at the bottom of each of our still
oh,
shots.
But, yeah, what we
like,
went on to do.
Yeah, Garrett graduated from high school and went on to be college valedictorian at Bryn Mawr. Wink.
Then he went off to have a horrible alcohol addiction.
Yeah.
And died tragically in the bathroom.
And was buried with a bottle of whiskey ginger.
Okay, back on that subject of, companies looking at how, from an artist perspective, do you guys feel like there are certain IPs that you avoid because of the company? Like, obviously, personally, from hearing that story, I probably wouldn't be trying to do a Star Wars of anything.
Yeah. But
I personally don't do anything Disney-related.
Yeah, they're
they
massive.
Defend their
That's like a given.
Yeah.
Well, now, Anne, you actually had a really interesting story about people trying to get you to appropriate stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Dude, do you want me to tell the story?
Sure.
Go for it.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Well, many moons ago. Many years ago, I used to do a lot of illustration jobs here and there in Toronto, and one of the things I used to do illustrations for were for nightclubs and raves and so on and so on. And this one rave company wanted me to do a flyer to promote their party using characters from Neon Genesis Evangelion. But they didn't want me to actually draw the characters or do a parody of it. They basically wanted me to go online, rip the pictures from the website, and lay it out that way. And I said I wouldn't do that because that was directly taking somebody else's artwork and, like, incorporating it into something else and then using it to sell something that the guy probably wouldn't want in a million years.
It's outright theft, basically. So.
Yeah. So I was kind of against doing that. I kind of lost a job against it. But I used to go on a lot of message boards for around that area, too. And I guess the word got out that I had said, oh, hello. Sorry, cat.
Cat's meow is awesome.
Cat attack.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess the word got out what I had said, and it started this huge flame war on this one message board where some people agreed with it and other people supported the whole idea that it was totally cool to grab somebody else's work and, basically use it for your own, your own uses to promote whatever or to make money, just simply because they lived in a different country and there was no way that they would come over and find you in a million years.
In Canada.
In Canada.
Well, I think because they were saying it was Japanese stuff.
Oh.
But clearly that's not the case since all the stuff game people do, like most of it's Japanese, and they'll
Yeah.
come after you.
Yeah, and I was just like, well, it's not cool. It's like the reason why I was upset is because, like, in downtown Toronto, you got to think they have a really big art university, and how many kids are actively going there? I mean, you could basically get somebody to do the original artwork, or you can bring like a new design or something fresh to the table, as opposed to just recycling old artwork from the late 90s. Or from like anime films or something.
Well, so along the same idea of bringing a new style to it, how do you do that as an artist? Like, what are things that you do or you think about when you're trying to take an IP that inspires you, but then do something on your own? Like, how do you, and then still kind of skirt that line, of I think we were talking about this earlier, being kind of relevant towards keeping that original idea there, but then still making your own, but making it recognizable to that person off the street. Like, how do you do that?
Actually really easy, I find. I mean,
Oh, we care to extrapolate then.
well, yeah,
'Cause
well,
I,
I mean,
it's so
you're,
easy he doesn't have to.
yeah,
well, no, I mean,
you just do it.
yeah, just do it, Garrett.
Kind of do. The official art is going to be in an entirely different style from what you have, a very different artistic voice. And so simply taking the character and, just redrawing it with the sort of way you would draw it, and
If you were designing
voila.
it for the first time, yeah.
Yeah, or, like if you take Ozzy and he's this fat blob with horns and a tunic, and you just draw a big fat blob with horns and a tunic in Omni style, and it's brand new Ozzy.
So what are the sort of things you used to then build upon it? Then, I mean, obviously recreating it in your own style, but then, I mean, what are the kind of things in games and that inspire you to take that idea and extrapolate on it further?
I mean, just sort of like the atmosphere that the game has, or
Whatever it is, like, what are the things that get you going in a game? Like, what's a game that you're like, oh yeah, whenever I play this certain part, because this happens, man, I really want to go draw, and that's what inspires me when I'm working on different pieces.
actually, I think I get more inspired just by the characters' designs themselves. Like, if I
Just how the
see.
original artist put the design together.
Yeah, or if it's, some sort of original character that I think was a cool idea, then that inspires me to try my hand at it, maybe.
So has there been any particular character that has really maybe recently kind of hit that switch for you?
Recently,
I think with Anne, it looks like it might be the Kraken just taking a stab in the dark though. She's too busy doing art.
Yeah,
Keep keep keep.
it's like she's not even on a podcast. Like, she's shrugging as if the listening audience is like, oh, I get that. And now we got noise out of her.
Well, so what do you, Anne, what do you think? Is there, what inspires you from games that there's a certain atmosphere, a certain feeling? What is it that elicits you to go and decide to draw the Kraken in your own style? What is it that gets the juices going in the beginning?
Well, for the major thing, if a game is inspiring to me to make art, it's got to be a playable game. If it's a game that I'm playing nonstop, if I can't put it down, I'm probably going to be, on 3 hours of sleep, and I'm at work and I'm doing doodles and I'm like drawing out, a situation or something happening from the game. Or I also like the character designs, from the game itself. That's always
So,
really appealing. But mainly, it's like the game's got to be playable. And if you're playing it and all your friends are playing it, then, it's like when Pokemon came out. Everybody was just not playing the game, they were living the game.
yeah.
He had tons of merchandise. Everybody was like trying to draw like what was it? A Charizard or something on their binder or something. And if you have one kid in the class who could do it the best out of everybody, you wanted them to draw it on your binder or your backpack or.
Or if you sucked, you just draw a Diglett and you're like, yeah!
Diglett's awesome!
Well, I mean, that brings up kind of interesting subject of art or video games is inspiring art artists to form mm-hmm. as children. Like, I mean, I can see where, like, my brother, one of the first things he ever drew was Link from, I think it was Ocarina of Time. He had the back in the day when you actually would look at the instruction booklet, and there was some art from the game there, and that's when he kind of traced it at first, then he kind of tried to recreate it on his own, and, you know, that game and him living that environment really inspired him to do more art. But, what do you guys think? Do you feel that video games today, they're often said as being, you know, eliciting violence and hatred within our children, maybe coming out from that other perspective that it's doing something else? What do you guys think?
That's a really good point. I mean, there's a lot of people who get their start as, you know, just doing fan art.
Yeah, a lot of people. And it's the same with mm-hmm. fan fiction, where there's mm-hmm. like people in the Fangamer staff who used to write crappy Fangamer or crappy Earthbound fan fiction are now like legitimate published authors of stuff that is not fan fiction. You got to get your start somewhere, and usually it's with stuff that inspires you from what's around you, and video games are kind of like a shared experience that you get to take part in and let your child imagination run.
Incidentally, when I first started doing digital art, I was a pixel artist.
So you did like the kind of the Super Nintendo, you know, pixel by pixel, square by square. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's pretty cool. So like what were some of the first things you ever did?
Some of the first things I did were crappy, but some of the first cool things I did was I recreated the Shedd Aquarium in Chicago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was into the isometric views. I don't know, what's a good, like SimCity, that sort of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that 40, angle.
Angle yeah. Side. So, yeah.
So, is there any particular games that their art style has maybe triggered something within you that you decided, wow, I'm going to try that different? Like you just said, with SimCity, I mean, there's that certain point of view. Is there other games that have done similar things to your art style? Or for either you, Anne or Marty?
Definitely. I would say WarioWare. It's strange as that may sound, but yeah, it has such an eclectic art style. And then certainly with the Wii version, it has this very clean vector sort of style. And so the sort of stuff I was seeing in WarioWare, I was also getting big into Takashi Murakami at that time, who's this Japanese artist who also does that sort of really clean, I don't know what you'd call it, bubbly sort of artwork.
The WarioWare kind of look.
Yeah, that sort of Japanese pop style.
Oh, okay.
I just thought was so cool.
What about you, Anne? Is it Fantasia for Disney that really inspired you?
No.
I'll never let that die.
No, that's one of the best stories, though. So what is the game that, you know, it maybe the way its style was, it changed your opinion or your point of view artistically?
I think it was more a time period of video games. I think it was really early 90s, from 1990 to 95, with a lot of the games that were coming out. Best example is Sonic the Hedgehog. I'm really attracted to bright, bold colors. And Sonic had a lot of really sharp blues, like Weezer blue.
Oh, yeah.
Why do you guys say that? What is that in reference to?
Like, because it's just a shade. Yeah, the Weezer album cover is that really bright, bright in your face Weezer blue.
Yeah. Liz, there's so many Weezer fans out there, like, how do you not understand what Weezer blue is? How can you be on this podcast?
If I Google Weezer blue, yeah, because it's a friggin' Weezer podcast.
Yeah, we might as well. I should have said on those things that Fangamer's a fan of.
Oh,
Weezer.
That blue.
Oh.
Yeah, I Googled Weezer blue. Yeah,
and it worked, didn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, Google, for proving us right.
Like 15, And yet, like, if you Google Weezer Blue, you get many different album, or it's the same album cover, but with many different shades of blue.
That's just the people who are grabbing the artwork and putting it online in whatever tool they're using.
I don't even know what the real Weezer Blue is, to be
honest.
You need the Pantone color book to figure it out.
Really.
John was here, he probably would know it by heart.
John.
Okay, so back on there. So for Anne, it was that certain time period of games and the kind of flashier colors. Is there any other games that have that sort of flashy aesthetic that you really enjoy? I'm trying to think of games like Donkey Kong had some really good color to it, you know? That world.
You see, I had a Sega Genesis growing up. When I wanted to play Earthbound, I would have to walk down to the video store and rent a Super NES.
That'll break the piggy bank.
Do they even rent consoles anymore?
They used to back in 1995.
Yeah, I remember. You could rent. I rented a Genesis once. I was just like, why did I do this?
Oh, Liz.
Oh.
I'm sorry. It was diehard Nintendo at the time. I had a Game Gear, and the thing just chewed through batteries and kind of soured me on the whole Sega experience.
Did you have a Game Gear that you could put the TV adapter on it and then it turned into a port?
I had that.
That thing was awesome. I was always so jealous, though. I was like, you have your own TV you can take with you wherever you want? That's
awesome.
Wow,
you get like 98 stations of static and dolphins. I could always get like nature programs with dolphins on it. So
yeah, for 3 hours with 6 AAAs, you too can have the world in your pocket. Or AAs, excuse me.
Well,
but, in the 90s, especially when you had like the Super Nintendo and the Sega Genesis, there was a horribly cartoony, bubbly, more realistic graphics were coming out. More realistic graphics in 16-bit. But you got like that more cartoony feel to it. And that was a lot more exciting than a bunch of blobs just kind of going across the screen.
Yeah.
Well,
if you grew up with like, you know, Atari or, you know, that kind of crap like I did, Super Nintendo was like the holy grail of
graphics.
Yes.
It was the future, basically.
Yeah.
So to steer this away from maybe what games were inspiring to, more of what do you guys think other effects maybe video games are having in the art world other than maybe starting a generation of new artists out there who are focused in that realm? What are other ways that video games? Because I know like one of the things that we had kind of discussed previously was a lot of the times they become almost cultural icons now. Mm-hmm. That you can have a lot of, like Mario is iconic in culture and is having a big effect, but then it transforms into kind of the maybe commercial art, I think is what we were calling the term of, you know, like t-shirts and that merchandise around it. But when it comes to video games and art, like what are some other venues? Like I don't know if there's a particular name, because again I'm not artistic, but like that 8-bit style, is that, does it have a name? Like, because you have like Dadaism and Impressionism.
Art,
is that what they call it?
Yeah.
So, you want
to call it?
Yeah.
I mean, as I'm saying, like, does video games in art have, are they be giving any sort of actual, like, official notice from the artist community at large? Does that make sense? Like, or is it just kind of still like an underground, oh, that's just video games, that's just kid stuff?
I actually tried looking up in academic journals anything that would have been written about video games being appropriated for fine art, and I couldn't find anything. So I think at least in that world, it's still under their radar.
I think the reason for that is nobody's ever successful until they're dead. So 30 years from now, when all the artists who are doing really cool stuff start dying off, I think we'll start seeing some of that cool art that's been appropriated actually in museums and stuff.
Well, they have I know of at least one video game appropriated piece that's in a museum. That's the Mario Clouds.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think I might have, I forgot where I linked to it, probably in the topic, but it's this artist who literally hacked Super Mario Brothers, removing everything but the clouds, and then so it's just like this video loop of the Super Mario clouds gently strolling past the screen.
Really?
Yeah, past the screen. And it's up in a museum in London.
Hmm. Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
So, like, it's not even playable or anything? It's just, like...
No, it's just this video
of clouds. That's oddly soothing. Is there any music, or is it just silent clouds?
It is just silent clouds. You can actually go on YouTube and see the...
I will. We'll link that in the show notes, too, because that sounds really neat.
So, aside from... appropriation of games into art, like, what does that make you guys feel as artists? Like, if you're the person who had designed the Mario aesthetic originally back then, to have that be pulled away, do you feel like the artist might be upset that someone has just taken their clouds and pulled out the, you know, is they consider that art, or is that...
Well, I know I'd be mad, but I mean, but to the people who are doing this appropriation, I mean, it's, if he had made a different pixel cloud, then it just wouldn't be the same. So the straight up appropriation, even though it makes it more, you know, legal gray area or, you know, blatant theft, that's part of the edginess, and that's, you know, a very important part of the piece.
What do you think, Anne? If someone were to take something originally you did like that and pull it apart and make it into its own piece of art, what do you feel?
It depends who'd be doing it. And it would really depend on the piece itself and what exactly they'd be doing with it. Like, for example, if I came up with the concept of Mario, I don't think I'd really be upset about someone taking the clouds and doing a piece like that. If anything, I would... feel pretty awesome that someone likes my work enough that they would do something like that, but they're not using the clouds really to sell their work.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how would you feel if somebody used the clouds like that and managed to get it into a museum or something, but in the process of doing that made a ton of money?
Yeah, there you go. It really
gets a lot. Yeah. Suddenly we have empathy for the people.
It happens all the time, unfortunately. Like, you know,
that's precisely what I Am 8-Bit is. They're selling those paintings.
Yeah.
And then, so again, is that sort of a rogue group kind of going against what the artist community feels is right, or is there not even a single voice on that particular aspect of it? Is it okay to be borrowing like that? Does it just piss people off?
Well, I know in the t-shirt world, there's a lot of discontent. Although the issue really isn't so much that it's illegal to do this, but that people are doing too much of just, you know, drawing Mario in some crazy style and slapping it on a shirt, and then they get a ton of money for it. So basically they're worried that, you know, all this, the video games... people can't get enough video game shirts, basically, and instead of artists trying to create something new, they're just giving up and, you know, slapping video games on a shirt for a quick buck.
May I interrupt and ask a question from the chat room? I don't know if we want to hold those till later, or...
No, let's go for it. What do they got?
Kevin_B_ER asks... Does anyone think the press for realistic graphics will actually be detrimental to future artists when all the hyper-realistic 3D inhibits the imagination? I suppose that should be if hyper-realistic 3D inhibits the imagination.
Kind of true. I do kind of see the real is brown, add some bloom. I think that's a little detrimental to... what video game aesthetics can be.
But there's going to be a backlash on that, though. I mean, I feel like there already is from gamers.
Yeah.
Especially with Bloom. Like, you try and play certain parts of Twilight Princess, and they're just unplayable because it's just like, you feel like you've been hit with a flashbulb.
Well, the question is, are those people speaking out eventually going, you know, is that a big enough voice to actually change what developers will do?
I was looking at kind of maybe from a different perspective of what his question was, that because of these kind of hyper-realistic graphics, is there not going to be a lot left to the imagination just to artists coming up now? Like, I can think that as someone who grew up in the time where Earthbound was came out when I was very young and impressionable, But that if instead it had been maybe like a Gears of War or like a Heavy Rain, where it's very realistic graphics, do you feel like this is going to have an effect on, you know, having less interesting things come out of video game artists?
Because there's less left to the imagination?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think that's true.
And not necessarily. I mean, because you can still take a character and you can still put your own spin on it. Mm-hmm. It really comes down to the mind of the artist who's actually going to be parodying it or doing their own thing from it.
So I guess personally, and this is probably just a already loaded question then, but for you guys, what are games that you particularly like the art style? And is it one that's more realistic or is it one that's more interpretive and unique? Well, we'll start, Marty, what do you got? What is one of your favorites?
I have to say one, because I just started replaying it again. Okami is definitely one of my favorites.
That's an awesome game.
Isn't it used, what is that style, the Japanese?
You can call it anything.
Sumi.
Like Japanese, yeah. Like that, or just inkbrush style.
I feel like that's the second podcast where someone's asked what that style is. And
it's probably me.
Yeah.
Both times.
What is that?
What do you got, Anne? What's one of the games that you like the aesthetic, the style, and is it more realistic or is it more interpretive?
I like Bible games.
Bible Adventure.
See, I wonder what game is my favorite game.
Well, come on.
Aside from the obvious gimme of Earthbound.
Yeah, that's why I was trying to say. I know this is a loaded question for some of us, but come on, we gotta have something else.
I always tend to hover towards a more playful, more cartoony type look of a game. I really try to stay away from, if it looks more real, I tend to stay away from it.
Yeah.
I like creativity. I like things that don't, like, you know, look like the way that they're supposed to. Like, you know, to me, video games are almost like watching like a movie that you can kind of jump into and play around with. So to me, the characters don't necessarily have to go into a direction where they're looking like you and me. They could be looking like giant fuzzy cats with party hats on them.
That's kind of interesting you put that out, because you do photography, right? I mean, that's your profession, so to speak, or one of many talents you have. And that's just a literal taking a picture of, you know, very something realistic. So does that mean that with your photography, you're trying to pull more of a, I don't know what you call that aesthetic. You're saying more posing things in a different way, juxtaposing them to make them look different? Or when you're doing photography, do you stick more to a trying to capture the essence of what that is? This is that picture. This is exactly how it was at that moment.
Well, if I'm working for the newspaper, you kind of have to take a picture of what's in the moment. But when I'm in the studio, it's more or less what makes a really good photograph is the dynamic between the photographer and the subject. And you really try to be as engaging as possible with your subject when you're trying to take their picture. So I'm usually trying to get someone who is engaging or is engaging with me so I can get a good photograph, and sometimes that works and sometimes it's a hot mess.
So I guess the answer is more along the lines that they're different enough that the medium's what you're trying to express from each one. They don't necessarily collide in that way.
No.
All right, what else we got, guys? I think we have some, definitely a lot of big opinions here on the forum thread that we put up this week. Every week we try and put up what our topic will be about a week in advance, but we've been kind of slacking on that lately, so that people from the community can go in and join in on the discussion before, and we can comment on what people have talked about. So one game that Ben brings up, Catan, is No More Heroes. And the art style, actually, I don't think he brings it up. He's commenting on its oh man, how am I gonna say? Is it Master Arrow? I think it is, about a game that particular interesting art style is No More Heroes. Have you guys played No More Heroes?
I have not.
No. How about Killer 7? Is that ringing any bells?
Never played that one either.
No.
Okay, well then, just for the sake of having an interesting discussion, sorry, Ben. And
I've
Mr.
seen
Arrow.
The art for No More Heroes. Yeah. It is pretty cool, and if I remember Ben's post correctly, the art kind of overcomes the game itself, where you're playing it because the characters are so well designed, and you like it's a game about you're fighting to become like the number one assassin in the world or something, and there's lots of stupid mini games, but the meat of the game is in fighting the other assassins so you can rise to the rank of number one. And the thing that makes the game so interesting is all these assassins have like the cool over the top kind of like real kind of like overly fashionable designs where they have all like ridiculous accessories on and stuff, and it's just I've looked at the art and I've thought I want to play this game, except I don't actually want to play it. I just want to live in the world where that art exists.
Yeah, I think Anne, she kind of touched on this earlier. If the game isn't playable, I don't care how good that art is. I can't go through it. Like a game that I think has a very cool art aesthetic or art style is Flower. Have you guys heard of this game? Mm-hmm. It's for the PlayStation 3, and it's a very different kind of style game where you play as the wind, so to speak. Joe actually did a review of this on one of the podcasts a couple back, and you play as the wind and you blow through these flower petals and you kind of pick them up, and the game doesn't really have any real strict I wouldn't necessarily say point. There's a end to the level. Like, there is some game mechanics of collecting these petals and pushing them through the level, but it seems like it's more about engaging a certain feeling from the audience. But it looks pretty gorgeous, and it doesn't look hyper-realistic. It just looks like a world that it couldn't exist because it looks so good. That's probably how I would describe it. But Ben does bring up a game that is near and dear to my heart, Hotel Dusk, which I think has a really cool
like art, black and white, hand-drawn.
That noir sort of. Yeah, then they just did so many cool things in that game to kind of pull in and really make a point of engaging not just the aesthetic of, you know, playing a game, but like where there's a lot of things with drawing. Like you had a little notebook where you could draw down notes. They would draw out the characters kind of sketch style. That was just – so, Marty, you've played Hotel Dusk?
Are you
familiar? Okay. And Hotel Dusk fan?
Huge.
You heard that they unfortunately went bankrupt, that company, right?
I heard that. They got stuck in the basement forever.
So sad. So Hotel Dusk, what do you think? Is there any particular aspects to that game, art style, that you has inspired you to do anything?
Has that actually inspired me? No, it hasn't actually inspired me to do anything. I think the reason is that it reads too much. It's more, I find that game more to be like a
book.
Puzzle, more of a book, choose your own adventure with, like, you know, you could play cards or do something else. And for me, it reminded me too much of reading a comic book.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I don't know, it was just, I guess it was mainly because I think a lot of the characters were drawn in a black and white type sketchy feel, when I'm more into brighter, bold colors or using strawberry as your menu option.
Let's see. Oh, Omni, Marty, you posted in the thread. I was about ready to say, oh, an Omnitarian comes in, but why don't you sum up what you talked about in the thread?
What did I talk about in the thread?
That's a good start. What did you talk about? You see, you have some links in here to, well, you have the Super Mario loop thing that you already talked about, the clouds. Mm-hmm. A wildly popular gallery shows with painters appropriating video game characters.
That's I Am 8-Bit.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Pixel artists hired for editorial illustrations.
Do we want to tell the audience a little bit about I Am 8-Bit? Because I feel like we're assuming they know what it is. But
that's a good idea.
Probably tell them.
Yeah.
Let's
throw the viewing audience a bone here.
Yeah, Marty, can you explain I Am 8-Bit?
Well, I don't know too much about it, but it's essentially I think it's actually a company in Los Angeles that hires painters to make paintings about video games that they like.
It's a bunch of guys who own like a couple of galleries in LA, and they have a show, I think, once a year where they get like some of the top names in the pop surrealism movement there to actively put in pieces of artwork that are directly influenced from video games. And there's usually over like 200, 300 pieces in this exhibit.
And it's very popular from what I understand.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of those pictures, and it's just as awesome.
Yeah, they are very cool. I was looking through them.
It's just amazing. Like you were saying, Marty, when how you take a Mario and you just do it in your own style, and it's just cool to see this people's perspectives. Yeah, it's really quite interesting. But Butsukoi chimes in on the topic.
Butsukoi.
And he comes in talking about. Video games are simply another thing for artists to get inspired from. You know, we've definitely been talking about in the cast here. And he's not surprised that video games have broken into the mainstream and influenced art. More people are playing them, continue to play them into their adulthood and accept them as a part of their life and culture. And this is something I actually wanted us to discuss that I kind of forgot that the idea, like especially like a game club that we're doing, that video games are becoming a shared experience that even though, you know, maybe I played baseball with my friends growing up and now that's a memory and experience we have, but, you know, we're all playing Shadow of the Colossus at the same time, but not together yet. There's that dialogue coming across and it's just, I just think that's an interesting thing that's happening, that video games are now becoming this sort of, it's not just culturally relevant, but they're having a way of tying into each other, like going to PAX, like you know everyone there has a certain kind of feeling towards games and how they enjoy them, and you can just start talking about, you know, how a game made you feel, and people will just kind of nod, oh yeah, I love that game too. But is there anywhere that you guys feel like that video games and art are really kind of showcasing something maybe to come in the future, something that will be going more towards, like, I maybe for an example, the I Am 8-bit is a beginning to something more. I don't know. What do you guys think? Because I just imagine that I didn't think that sort of thing could even exist. Like that, there would be people who are interested enough in seeing video game art showcased at a gallery. I mean, that's just so cool to me. But what do you guys think?
I think it's interesting in the future whether will games become more popular such that everybody knows what's going on in the video game world, like the man on the street, or will it become more niche and more fragmented as more games get released and as more people sort of split up based on their tastes? I think that's an interesting sort of thing to predict.
Will it become more niche and, well, I have played 20 games that you've never even heard of. Well, I've played maybe a whole genre of games you've never played, which is sort of a thing we already see, like with Anne had a Sega and she played the Sega growing up, and Liz did not have a Sega and didn't want one. And
my friend had one, and her friend or she knew someone who had a Super Nintendo. That's how it was back in the day when you didn't make your own money. You had one console and your friend got the other.
In my family, it was we would get a console after like the new one had been out for already a couple of years. Like we got a Nintendo when Super Nintendo had been out for like a year and a half, and they'd already gone towards like the redesign of like the new, like where you put the Nintendo cartridge down in the top. But we managed to get out the last old school style where you still had to blow on it and push the cartridge around just the right way.
That sucks. It would be cool if you had a top loader. Those are really fine.
My neighbors did, and it was nice. I'm like, oh wow, you just put the game in and it works. That's pretty amazing. Okay, what else we got in the forum thread? I'll make sure we hit climb hazard. Glenn Hazard. What she talks about, it's interesting how the past of video games and the art world have crossed at least. For example, I checked out the art section at bookstores often, and I've noticed for the past few years, a few books have been published featuring video game fan art. This includes I Am 8-Bit, Super I Am 8-Bit,
I didn't know about this either.
Book book washer just mentioned, and most notably Udon Entertainment Street Fighter and Darkstalkers tribute books. It's amazing to see a studio acknowledge its fans of the materials it markets and, in turn, showcase how the fans have been inspired. It's one thing to promote art like this through a website, but the effect is so much greater on a printed material. Yeah, I've been to Barnes & Noble, and I've noticed the same thing. You can get, like, Shadow of the Colossus art book, you know, and I think that's just awesome because usually that's just kind of like a special collector's edition pack-in. Like, you get the World of Warcraft special edition, and it comes with an art book. What do you guys think of the pack-in of the art? Do you think it's just something that is a fad right now, or do you think this is something we're going to see increase more as time goes on?
I'm totally thinking you're going to see more of it. Totally.
I love seeing it.
Here's the problem, though. I've been getting games that have art books in the special editions for a while, and the problem is they're starting to gravitate more towards just putting the CG in. And, like, high-res pictures of the character designs. But that's not what I want to see. I want to see, like, the original sketches and cells and character designs and that sort of thing. Like, I remember I got, I mean, call me a dork, but I got the collector's edition for Final Fantasy X2, which was, the art book, as it were, was just all pictures, like, screenshots of them in the different dress spheres. And it's like, that's not art, that's just screenshots.
So this is something that I think John, I mean, him were discussing this once, but I'd love to hear your guys' take on it. So when you get to see the concept art for a game as an artist, what does that do for you? Like, because for me, I'm just like, that's cool. But I'm imagining on for you guys that that's something, seeing the process of another artist, is that what's really cool? Or what is it that makes it really fun?
It's being able to see the process. It's being... Since there's usually, like, multiple character designers or multiple concept artists going on at the same time, it's interesting to see how they play off each other. Like, for instance, in Final Fantasy, you have Amano usually does completely different things than what everyone else will make and looks completely different to what the final sprites actually are. So I think it's very interesting to have that sort of... It's already... remixed itself,
seeing the kind of process go through. But is it, I don't know, to me it would almost be like almost aggravating, because I would want to ask them questions like, well, why did you choose to do this, or why did you choose to do that? As an artist, can you kind of see those in the different drawings and iterations? Do you get a sense of maybe what they were trying to accomplish when they changed up the designs, or is it just maybe them throwing things at the wall?
I think you can sort of take a guess. Usually what I imagine is that you can draw something on a piece of paper, but it's entirely different to translate that into an actual good-looking 3D model that moves. So a lot of the time I think that's sort of what's going on.
So, Anne, here's a question for you. Would you ever... If you ever did original, maybe for a game, made your own design for a character... And then they take that and interpret it into some other 3D model of your, you know, your design. As your artist, how do you feel when they always seem to be so drastically different, you know? Like there's such a, especially like with the Final Fantasies. Like, how does that make you feel as an artist?
Well, like, one of the things that really blew my mind, because I never had the original box for Final Fantasy VI or Final Fantasy III, if you want to call it that. I never had the original box, so I never knew what the concept art was until I got the internet and I started to look around, and it blew my mind. It really did. I was like, whoa, so you have all these crazy sketches and you made a whole bunch of pixels? I think it goes hand in hand when you have the game. Like, the game itself doesn't have to look exactly like the concept art. It's just somebody else's interpretation. Like, somebody has their own interpretation of what the characters are going to look like, and then somebody else takes it and puts it into the game, makes it work.
That's something, I guess, as someone who's not artistic, I always look at, like, I remember when they showed the, like, making of the newer Star Wars films, and they showed a lot of the worlds that the movie would take place on, and these really amazing paintings that the artist had done to kind of say, well, this is what I think Coruscant will look like. And then you look at what they ended up with afterwards. I'm just like, there are so many steps between these two, right? Like, they don't just, it almost looks like two different artists.
They only have the budget to do half of the painting.
Right, yeah, like, what, there is so many things between the two. I'm like, so what happened? Like, this artist did this, and then you just get a different artist to go, okay, and then you make it in something 3D, and they're just like, okay, that's cool. I'm just going to do my own thing. Or I always notice that as kind of an outsider. Like, I don't see that translation. Yeah. But anyway, is there any other ones from the topic here I wanted to talk about? Oh, yeah. Rundevros has an interesting point of view here with the, I really look up to developer studios that have a positive relation with their current fan base. I wish we saw this behavior more rather than having an antagonistic relationship by opposing a lot of fan projects that I've seen get shut down by some companies. The biggest example I can cite is Valve, the creators of Half-Life and Team Fortress 2, as a great example of a company that supports the artistic fans. For instance, I really like how they highlighted all the cool things that fans have created on places like the official TF2 blog and the official Left 4 Dead 2 blog. And I have to agree, I think that any company that's willing to let people make something with their IP and just be cool about it, I don't know, I feel that's the kind of culture I get along with and I want to see mm-hmm. move forward. And I think it's very kind of close-minded, just like, nope, it's our IP, you can't do anything with it. And you always end up with something cooler at the end. But is there any other particular games? I mean, I haven't realized we've talked about games a fair amount, but that you guys particularly like to do fan art from? I don't know that I've ever asked you guys that question. Like, is there other games like I really like to draw besides Earthbound and Mother 3 and Super Mario RPG that you're like, oh, I'm super into Hotel Dusk drawings or something like that?
I like
go ahead. What was that?
Bonk's Adventure.
Oh.
I also had a TurboGrafx-16.
Oh, wow. You chose all the winning systems, didn't you?
I chose all the e-consoles.
Did you have a Jaguar?
No,
I never. Did you watch your movies on a Laserdisc?
By that time, I had smartened up.
I'm not picking the winners anymore. What about you, Marty? Any particular games that you feel that way?
I think I might have to show my geekdom here and say Pokemon.
Oh, nice. Really?
I've done some Pokemon fan art in my day. It's irresistible.
Yeah.
Do you have a Diglett on your binder?
No, I actually, the other day, I found like the oldest sketchbook that I have from when I was 10. I opened it up and there was Pokemon fan art in there.
Barton, what is your favorite Pokemon?
That's a tough one.
You must pick.
Any. Camera. Like
which one?
Camera. From Ruby and Sapphire. He's a camel.
Oh, Camerupt. I couldn't hear. Yeah, the one with the volcanoes on his back.
Mm-hmm.
He's cool. He's crappy, but he's cool. I like him.
Tell Liz what your favorite Pokemon is, and she'll let you know how it is.
Hey, one of my favorite Pokemon was Golem, but I'll be the first one to tell you he's garbage on wheels.
That is my favorite Pokemon. He is
many quad weaknesses. That's not what you want in a Pokemon.
He's so cool looking.
Yeah. While he's dead.
Is there any particular games that you really like, specifically their character design, you guys? Throwing that out there. What do you got, Anne?
I really like Snake from Metal Gear Solid a lot. I love Snake his character cool. design. I would marry him, but he's not the marrying type.
No, he's the Levia.
And he's also like 90 now.
I know, it's hotter.
What?
Oh, what about you, Marty? Any particular character design you particularly like?
I think I might have to fall back on Okami again. Like, the monsters in the game are very inventive, especially because they're based on real Japanese mythology, but then they twist it so that it's sort of brand new.
You know what you would like, Marty, is I just saw this the other day. Somebody drew the all 500 or so Pokemon in the Japanese Sumi.
I saw that.
That is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
I want to link that in the show notes because it's so neat seeing all the Pokemon
totally do that. It is.
Designed in the different styles. Like, that's what's cool about fan art. It's like you guys have been saying, kind of taking something and making it totally new and interesting.
All right. Well, I think it's about time to wrap up our discussion here. Does anyone have any final thoughts or words they'd like to express before we start closing up the show?
I actually wanted to pose a question.
Yes.
So where do you think video games and fine art will go next? What does the future hold? for the Fine Art video game mashup. And I actually have what I think is an interesting response. So you want me to go first?
Yeah, yes. Definitely.
Yes.
All right, I'll show you how it's done. So my vision of the future.
In the year 2000. Sorry.
As video games become more culturally relevant and more artistically relevant, I someday want to see, you know, very famous artists produce a video game. Like, I would love to see a Banksy.
Oh.
I would love video games to reach that sort of artistic, you know, validation, so that where, you know, famous established artists would try taking it on. Because I think it's a excellent medium to have a sort of interactive narrative between the artist and the viewer is just completely impressed in it. And I want to see where artists take that.
Well, I mean, when you describe that, I think, well, the question is also kind of like, where are video games going to go themselves, and how will that affect the other? Like, so I think, yes, if they can become more mainstream, that you will see, I mean, just more things like that, that 8-bit, I forget the name of it. The
8-bit?
Yeah, more stuff like that. Like, Seattle has a lot of art galleries downtown. I was like, that would just be the awesomest day, where I walk down and there's like a showcase of, you know, video game inspired art. Like, that would be really cool to me. That's where I'd like to see things go. But I kind of feel like, at least the way that I see video games kind of trending right now, at least for the next maybe 5 to 10 years, is that it's more about those casual games, right? It seems to be more games like the Farmvilles and things you can play on your cell phone and in a browser. And I kind of feel like the art in those is I don't know, lowbrow or what the term is. It's just, it's not as good as the stuff that I feel like we're playing as a community. And what I would like to see in the future is that I feel like, that's what I'd hope, is that would get more complex, that you would see more of what we're seeing maybe like in consoles happen in the casual space, that kind of level of detail for art. But I don't know, I think that's just wishful thinking that it'll
maybe
ever get
with
to
the,
that
the sort of bubbling of the indie game movement, that'll, we can put our poker chips on that one.
Yeah, and I guess that's the other thing, I'd love to see that indie games, so I feel like they're really pushing the bounds of combining art and game together.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I really like, and that's something that I've always, I try and hint to our fan gamer staff that we should really try and find ways to get behind some more indie games and help build communities around those and help do, you know, kind of merchandise around that. Cause I mean, I love indie games, and I think, I hope that's more, that's the future I plan to be hanging out in, indie games. I think that's the kind of things that I like to play and will continue to like to play. But what do you think, Anne? What's the future? Tell us our fortunes, or continue painting. You know, one of the two.
You're gonna get older, and you're gonna get fatter. You're gonna go on some diets.
Okay, and now the future of art and video games.
Okay, art and video games. If I could, I would just like to see more of it. I would like to see more people start to get more excited about it. I would like to see more people knowing about it. And I would like to see people start to recognize it more as an actual art form, as opposed to harumph, you're just doing fan art.
Yeah, I try to dodge that discussion with Ebert and, and his opinion. We'll have to have John and you guys back on to discuss that some point in the future. But I don't know if it'll really be an interesting discussion. I have a feeling that we all have a very different opinion than he does.
Yeah, and our opinions are all very similar amongst ourselves.
Might not be that interesting to listen to. So, Liz, what future of art and video games, where do you want to see that go?
I don't know. I think it's going to be one of those things that, like, I don't think it's going to break out in the mainstream anytime soon. I think it'll take, like, a full generation before that stuff really becomes something that's like kind of widely accepted. I don't know if the future lies in indie games, or I don't think it lies in Farmville and that kind of stuff. I feel like that crap is like the future of board games. That's I feel like there's always going to be the big production games. Like, I don't think you're going to see The Legend of Zelda Secret of Cafe World, like, 5 years from now. I don't think you have to worry about anything like that.
Legend of Zelda Farmville?
Yeah. Legend of Zelda, you just found some rare sassafras. Share it with all your friends.
And for our final word on this subject, we have our buddy Kevin Williams with his Kevin Says segment.
There's one place in popular culture where video games have had an effect, which I feel has been somewhat negative. Which is to say, I hate it. How often these days do you pick up a movie review, typically for some high-octane thrill ride with an unscrupulous hero fighting mysterious terrorists, only to read the entirely useless and non-descriptive phrase, "It's just like a video game"? It's bad enough that the reviewer in question obviously has no sense of the breadth of gaming genres. You'd never compare Top Gun to Tetris. But they further illustrate their shallow understanding by assuming that a video game would have a shaky camera, constantly jumping around the scene, capturing the action from assorted random angles. That would be the most confusing and uncontrollable video game of all time. And when they could use the comparison in a justified fashion, they never do. You never read that the plot exposition in a movie would be worthy of Metal Gear, or that the characters are as well developed as the supporting cast in Half-Life. You could even lay down a wicked burn by saying that the storyline was about as deep as Need for Speed. But, regrettably, the world of movie reviews is a closed circle. It's not their fault that they have no idea how to properly use an alternate medium to construct a simile. They just know that they have to connect with their readers somehow, use modern-sounding allegories to prove they're with it, and therefore that their review is considered insensible. And there's a lot of movies in the world. They probably don't have time to delve into any games that take longer to finish than Bejeweled. So I want you to take a lesson from these reviewers. Don't just stick with video games all the time. Watch some movies, read some literature, get out there and see the world. Become a true member of the Renaissance. That way you won't someday find yourself making any stupid comparisons, like, that video game was just like television. For Fangamer, I'm Kevin Williams.
Let's wrap this up. Thanks a lot for being on the show to Anne doing the awesome work there on her painting. Do you name your paintings, Anne?
Yes, you do.
What is that one called?
Oh, I don't actually name it until I finish it.
Oh, okay. I don't know how the process works.
I do throw my slippers at it.
You should name it Garrett.
don't name it Garrett.
Yeah, give Garrett's little newsboy hat thing.
Name it Neopala.
I told Matt I want to change my screen name to SSJ Neopala, because I want to be really cool. Everyone will know I can go Super Saiyan at any moment.
All right, so...
Random numbers at the end of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. 17254.
SSJ Neopala Quasm.
All right, so thanks to Ann. Thanks to Marty, man, for coming on and helping us flesh out our ideas and just eventually saying... the hell with it. Let's just talk about whatever we decide to talk about on the show. Thanks to our chat room for joining us. It's always fun to have you guys around and watch us.
All 11 of you. All 11 of you. Us are us.
Shh, quiet. They don't have to know that. There's 11 of you, and we love each and every one of you. So thanks for tuning in. Join us for next week's show, which we'll actually know ahead of time, which we don't always do. We will be actually having a... And I don't know if we'll do a Ustream, but it'll be live from Portland, Oregon, because we'll have a road show, so to speak. We'll have Reed, John, hopefully I can get their wives to be on as well. Steve will be on, myself, and then Liz. You're actually going to be out that one.
I will be in Philadelphia, so...
It'll be a good cast. It's rare that we have the whole crew in the actual same building, so it should be a good time. So tune in for that. So yeah, thanks again to everybody. So we're gonna sign off. Everyone, say good night.
Good night.